Welcome to the You and Me podcast, the show where we dive deep into the beautiful world of weddings. I'm Laura, the founder of Wanderlust Creative, an international wedding planning and styling company servicing a global collective of loved up couples.
And I'm Andy, the founder of The Bridal Journey, a source of inspiration for brides, and Revealed, a wedding marketplace where brides can buy and sell pre-loved wedding items.
In each episode of the You and Me podcast, we sit down with a real bride who openly shares their unique wedding planning journey. From the excitement of the proposal to the magical moments of her wedding day, we delve deep into the emotions, the challenges, and the triumphs of planning a wedding.
Join us as we celebrate love, offer practical advice, and share the experiences of brides just like you.
Prepare for heartfelt conversations and inspiring stories on the You and Me podcast. Good morning and welcome to our newest episode of the You and Me podcast. Today we have on the podcast Izzy Burke. Izzy, welcome to the pod.
Hello. Hello, guys. I was just saying before, I'm so happy to hear your voice again, Laura. I missed it.
Oh, I've missed talking to you. For just a bit of back context, and I'm sure that we'll get into it, Izzy is one, and Josh, her husband, is one of my clients that got married in Lake Como in Italy this year. So I am so excited to relive the day. I'm sure you are too, because it's like so close since it's happened. So it is fresh as. So yeah, I'm so looking forward to it. But Izzy, introduce yourself to our audience.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Melbourne and then moved to Sydney for 5 years. I'm now currently in London. I was in the financial industry for over 8 years and now trying, emphasis on trying, to build my own tech business whilst working and traveling as much as possible before we head back to Sydney to start our family.
Tell me about your tech business. What are you building?
Okay, so we're building an AI fashion search drive. So this actually came about a lot during the wedding process, because I found searching online for like clothing items, it was just so draining. We had multiple tabs open. So I decided to build this search engine that would compare the same item across multiple different retail stores, the price, the delivery cost, the delivery time, as well as like discounts, because it was just so overwhelming. And I wanted something that would read my mind. And I felt like I was getting fatigue and purchasing items and then wasting money and returning them. So right now we're in the process of developing this app.
It's so clever, Izzy, and I think it's one of those, you know what it is, you know, when you describe it, I feel like it is like the invention of the post-it. You know those things that, or like the fish soy sauce, right? You know the things that everybody needs but nobody needs until they've got it, and then they're like, how did we do this before without it? That's what I feel like this is going to be. And moving forward with where the tech space is going to go or is currently going, that's exactly what everybody will need. No one's got time anymore. Everyone just wants it at their fingertips. It's exciting.
Yes. And I remember, because I was speaking, because Laura's been with us through this process, because when we were planning the wedding, we were also developing this app, and it wasn't AI to start off with, because only last year AI came in. Mm. And so then we pivoted and we're like, now, okay, great, with this whole AI thing, it's just changed the game. And we're so excited to see where it goes.
So how did the proposal unfold? Just rewind it back to the very beginning. Tell us about the proposal.
Yeah, so the proposal happened actually during COVID. So we were heading down to Melbourne for my 25th birthday. And I had my whole family there, my grandparents there. And I remember my mom kind of mentioning to Josh, being like, is this going to be a proposal? And I was thinking, no, like, surely not. Josh, I don't even know if he was like, yes or no, but I think it really clicked and we kind of looked at each other and we're like, no, but maybe like this could be it. We knew that we were going to like do it like sooner rather than late, or we're going to do it at some point in the future. And so COVID, it just seemed like it was meant to be. I mean, having everyone there, we didn't know when we're going to see them again. It was the perfect moment. He knew that I wanted to do it around my friends. I didn't know for sure, but when it came to my 25th birthday and I was asking my girlfriends, like, what should I wear? I was going to choose like this pink dress or this white dress. And they were like, for sure, the white. And I was like, okay, I think it's definitely going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then on the day, I remember my girlfriend coming over to see me before and she was like already crying. And I was like, what? Yes. Okay. This is going to happen today. And then the nerves kicked in. And I remember Josh doing his speech. And then it was just so incredible. After that, one of my girlfriends hosted a surprise engagement party at her place. And we just danced the night away.
Oh, it's perfect. So special. And it's to have your family there and friends and like magic. Not a lot of people get it. It's, you know, a lot of the time it's just them and how close you are to your family and friends. It would have just been a pretty, pretty special time.
Yeah, I was bawling my eyes out. I was in tears, even though like I semi kind of knew that it was coming, like I still was so emotional. And having everyone around you, like some prefer to do it by themselves. I'm the girl that would prefer to do it with those around me for sure.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? It's a super inclusive experience that you try to create with something like this because, you know, you guys are celebrating each other and your relationship, but all of those close to you are celebrating you too as well.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Lovely. All right, I really want to dive into the next part because I'm really interested to hear between you and Laura about the wedding. So we know from the beginning intro that you had enlisted Laura to help you with your wedding planning and you kind of immediately knew you wanted a planner, which is a very smart move. I don't think a lot of people understand how much goes into planning a wedding and to delegate and outsource that to a planner. Like I was shocked because Laura assisted in planning my wedding. Just the amount of math involved in florals on your table, and like we were doing shared plates, so the flowers needed to be dropped every certain amount of where the plates were, and it all had to be like measured out a meter of the table length, and just something that you don't, just those little things that you have no idea. And I've heard, if people have listened previously to the podcast, when Laura has spoken about some of the mishaps that have happened or like refrigeration, if you're offsite, just all those little details that people don't actually fully understand. You know, you attend all these weddings and everything's like amazing. You don't realize really what goes behind the scenes or what's involved in it. So you had obviously got engaged and then you enlisted Laura from Wonderlust Creative. So how did you go through the planning process with her? How did that kind of get going?
Okay, so we wanted a long engagement kind of. So, and especially because we were also during COVID. So we prolonged it. When we spoke to Laura, we knew straight away that we wanted to be with her. We didn't look at any other planners. We just connected so well. So once we secured Laura, we then moved on to the venue. The venue, we started and we thought we were going to do it in New South Wales first. We were looking around. Laura came up and she visited a few sites with us, which was amazing.
And she said, why not try Lake Como, Italy?
No, oh my God, that was so much later, wasn't it?
No, forget New South Wales. Let's just move it to Lake Como.
I think it wasn't until we got the prices back and we were like, okay, we love these venues. They're absolutely amazing. And I remember speaking to my dad and my dad was like, you know what, with these prices, why don't you, like, I feel like you get so much more value if you were to do it overseas and make a little bit more of an experience from it. So that's when we started thinking about doing our wedding overseas. Also because we did have a lot of people and we thought, oh, you know, some may not be able to make it. So it really worked with us. On top of that, we knew that we were wanting to move overseas for a bit. So it kind of all aligned with having an overseas wedding.
And is talk me through what you guys felt for this particular situation, because, and I don't actually think we even spoke about it really during the process, but so many of our destination clients have, and you would have too to a sense, have this angst or anxiety or nervousness around asking guests to travel, right? That's a big thing. So a lot of people come to, like, we get international inquiries weekly. When we explain that, and always the first question they'll ask me will be, is it the same price to get married over there as it is here? Is it cheaper? What's the hardest thing, kind of thing? So how did you guys feel about, once you made the change between, you know, and we looked at the closest Italian villa that you're going to find in Australia in New South Wales. Like, that was, they imported the marble.
What was the venue? Just for people listening.
Palladio Arcadia.
Never, I haven't heard of that. Yeah, it was amazing, beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful space. You know, they imported majority of their stock and their house and their urns from Italy. So it was beautiful. It's a gorgeous space. But, you know, to shift from that to being like, we may as well just do the real thing. You know, it's in, you know, you're looking at a 13 grand marquee over there compared to a 50 grand marquee here.
So it is cheaper in ways.
Okay. However, I just want to know, how did you go about going, okay, we're going to do this? And how did you talk to your closest friends and family about the shift to go, you know, down the road in Sydney versus on a plane to Europe?
It was really difficult. It was not easy, especially because I was like, I want to please everyone, and this isn't going to please everyone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I actually started the process by speaking to everyone individually. Like, I remember sitting down with some of my girlfriends individually being like, so we're thinking of doing it overseas. And some people were like, this is amazing. Yes. Like, we can't wait. And some were like, oh no, dude, like, I wouldn't do that if I was you. And I was like, so torn. It was really, really hard. And anyone that does a destination wedding does feel that guilt, because it's so much time, so much money and commitment from them. It may be easier for us, yes, but for them, it's harder. And I totally agree. Looking back on it, I wouldn't have done it any other way. An overseas destination wedding was absolutely incredible. And I'm so glad that we did do what we wanted to do, because I wouldn't take it back for the world. The prices over there, I would say, are cheaper. Yes. Like, for example, a marquee, and Laura knows more about it, but what hit us, I reckon, was the currency, like the exchange.
Mm.
It then turned out to be the amount, maybe even a little bit more, but we still wouldn't change it for the world.
I guess it's one of those things too, when you're speaking to people, you can't allow yourself to be upset or ruin friendships over if people can't come with family members and things. It is what it is, and it's you decide to have it overseas, so if people can come, they can come. But if, you know, some people can't come, it's just, it is what it is. You can't, you know, put that on people to expect them to come either. And I think that's something that some people, you know, can ruin friendships. They don't understand, you know, it's your choice to have it. And as you said, it's a lot to put on people, to fly halfway across the world to, you know, attend your wedding. So yeah, I think it's just, you can't have expectations on who's going to come and who's not. But how did you manage I think this is like a big thing, because people just don't know how to manage the guest list. Like, in terms of like people you invited versus people that attended, was there a big discrepancy between that, or was that really hard to navigate? Because I've got a friend, and her partner's Italian, and sister-in-law had a wedding, and I think that like they had to have it like at literally a basketball venue, and had to have, because I think there was 500 people, and then they had to like air it on TV in like a separate room. And she's like, I just don't want to do that, but we're expected to invite all these people. Like, that's just what the expectation is. So they are thinking about getting married overseas. And I'm like, I shouldn't say your name, but I'm like, people might come. Like, you might invite this 500 guest list and they may fly. Like, it might not mitigate your guest list if that's what you're planning to have an overseas wedding, to have less people come. Like, what was that versus like the percentage, just out of interest?
So we invited 160 people and we only quoted for 70, thinking that 60 would come.
Yes.
And then we ended up having 85 people coming. So it was a little bit over. It wasn't too much over. It wasn't like the whole 160 came. And I feel like we navigated that because we did have an engagement party in Sydney. So others could come and celebrate with us somehow, mm-hmm. as well as because the proposal was in Melbourne. So I had my Melbourne girlfriends there, and then the Sydney was more Josh's mates, and then anyone else that also wanted to really be there for the wedding could come overseas. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what cut it down. And the 85 ended up being mainly family and then some, and then the bridal party and then some friends.
So yeah, that's quite substantial for an overseas wedding, and Laura could probably speak to that. But yeah, oh, well, it's not too bad. Yeah, I mean, when you're adding up per plate, it's, there could be potentially another 15 grand sitting there with those extra guests that you allowed for. But, you know, that sounds like you had a great turnout then. Like, that's a pretty average size wedding. And so that was a bit of a challenge. But did you face any other, like, lucky that you had Laura on board as a wedding planner to help you navigate that. But were there any other challenges that arose through planning a wedding overseas?
I think definitely the language barrier, and Laura can also talk to this. She, it was a bit hard. There was some miscommunications, or like we speak differently to they, and like when we were planning the courses, they wanted to do all these different courses, and like we're from Australia and we're like, we only need like the main and the dessert. So that was a bit tricky. But other than that, I think it was pretty good.
Yeah, look, I think the biggest thing is just understanding, and you know, you mentioned it just earlier, you've got to be flexi on certain things. So, you know, you've got to stand your ground on certain things, but then on other things you've got to lean into the way the Italians do it. And the reason they do it so well is because they're quite methodical in how they operate. And so, yes, we don't want a 7-course degustation, but like, okay, let's do 3. You know, we might have only wanted 2 in Australia. So it's about that compromise as well with suppliers that, yeah, you can definitely push for what you want, but what they do the best is what you need to lean into, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was amazing because we did lean into it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So I think, like, I don't know, when people think of overseas, like whenever I think of Italy, I think of fashion, I think of Milan Fashion Week, I think how incredibly well dressed the men are over there. So let's talk me through, because you know, your venue is one conversation we can have, but your guests looked phenomenal on the day. It was just this, you know, formal dress attire in Australia is not super popular, but over there, talk us through the wedding theme, your recovery party. Like, how did you get everybody in that vibe of you know, the fashion scene over there, because it's a big one?
Well, I always think about Kourtney Kardashian's wedding now. Was everyone dressed by Dolce?
Oh my gosh, no, but we did have the dress code. It was like La Moda Italiana, which was Italian fashion. So when we explained it to our guests, we said for the men to wear like linen, you know, like light colors, open collar and loafers, just like not black tie, because we did black tie for the engagement. We wanted them to really feel the Italian vibe. So to dive into that, and then for the women to wear block colors, because we felt like if they were to wear prints or patterns, the venue's already so much. We wanted to keep it not crazy, too crazy. We wanted to keep it simple but still vibrant. So the block colors worked really, really well, and we're really happy with how it turned out. The girls just turned up. Like, they all looked absolutely amazing. Yeah, so that was for the wedding. And then for the recovery, we had it at this beautiful place, Villa Camilla, where we spent the whole week. So we had the hens there, which was also incredible, the rehearsal, the wedding day, and then, well, the getting ready, and then the recovery. And the recovery was Slim Aaron's themed, which was sentimental to us because that's one of our favorite photographers. And even our place in Sydney's kind of like got some decor with Slim Aaron's. But the venue was so Slim Aaron-esque that it was just perfect. We did it around the pool area. It was a great just kind of theme for recovery. So that was like delving into like that Italian Riviera, like luxury kind of relaxing vibe.
Yeah, and for those listening, I mean, we'll put some photos up, but Villa Camilla was, you know, right on the main water. It had a boat dock in front of it. It was this beautiful salmon pink, double, triple story villa. It was incredible with a pool and these manicured gardens. And so it really leaned into the experience you kind of wanted to give your guests.
Yeah, exactly.
And talking about wedding vendors and finding your suppliers, and I assume Laura played a big part in that. So how did that go? Did you bring people from Australia over? Like, was that easier than getting a photographer from Italy? Or how did you kind of manage the vendor side of things? I'll ask that to you both.
Oh, yes. The main vendors, like the photographers, obviously the planner, they were from Australia. I can't remember who else was. The rest were from Italy, I believe, like the catering, makeup and hair. Yeah.
And why did you both, and I'm sure this was spoken about together, because when I see all these weddings that I post on the Bridal Journey, especially overseas with Australian brides, it's always an Australian photographer. Why, or, you know, and usually maybe a makeup and hair artist from Australia, a lot of people, that's the two, like the three Australian key, and I could be wrong here, Laura, just correct, and videographer perhaps as well from Australia.
Photography is probably the biggest,
Is it because it's familiar to the bride, or is it cheaper to fly someone from Australia to Europe? Like, why do I see again and again weddings overseas with Australian suppliers just for those kind of, photographer, hair and makeup?
Well, Izzy, why did you choose to bring the incredible team from Lost in Love across?
I loved their work. I always knew straight away that I did want to have them just capture our wedding. So we chose them. I mean, I didn't really even think twice. I reckon I could have chosen a photographer overseas, but no, I just loved their style so much. And then when it came down to the price, I found that they were also going to be doing a lot of international weddings as well at the same time as us. That I think they were going to do another one in Como, so it just worked out really well.
Yeah, right. And I suppose too, as you said, like they spend that whole Europe season, which is our winter, over there anyway, so they're kind of just flying across. And then perhaps is it that you just pay for their flights from one area? Like, how does that work?
Yeah,
Laura?
Every supplier does it differently.
Yeah.
Some do set packages that,
so it's not as
for
expensive
every single person.
Perhaps
so they're
an Australian supplier.
Yeah, well, it depends. Yeah. Some people do set packages that charge everybody for an international flight because it's included within it. Other people say we're already over there, so it's a reduced rate.
Right.
Other people say you're not paying for our flights because they're comped, but you have to pay for our domestic travel and ACOM and a car and stuff. So supply-wise, businesses do everything differently. In terms of like choosing for everything online, I feel that the actual price of photography, and like if you got to compare apple to apples, I'm not comparing like the quality and professionalism and Lost in Love to somebody who's charging 2,000 euros, right? So you got to compare the same caliber of supplier, but I think a lot of people do fly them over as well if they're getting married from Australia because of the control that they have with the quality and the quality of their deliverables. Does that kind of make sense? So it's like they know exactly what they're getting. They know that there's going to be no pushback. They know that they are communicating in their same first language that they can with each other. So it is that familiarity.
Right. So it's like, don't rule out Australian suppliers because it might actually not be as expensive as what.
Yeah,
it might
absolutely.
Be over there. So
yeah.
Because to me, if I was planning overseas wedding, I wouldn't know without a planner. So I'd just rule out completely Australian suppliers because I'd be like, oh, I've got to pay like, you know, how much a flight these days. It sucks. Their flights, but it could be worthwhile for our audience listening to inquire if they really strongly want one of those Australian suppliers with them. You know.
The only thing that I would flag with that is that, I mean, look, everybody has to start somewhere if they want to get into the destination or European market. But if you are investing good money, and I don't know, Iz, you might be able to contest to this, if you are investing good money on a supplier that you're, you know, you really, really enjoy, you've got to make sure that they've done it there before.
Yeah.
It is a different world in Europe. There's different laws you've got to adhere to. There are different requirements. There are different venues have, you know, different things you need to give them. So if you are investing a really good percentage of your wedding budget, I would be just be mindful that these guys have got the experience to be able to do it too.
For sure. Definitely.
So is... talk us through, I mean, look, we've touched kind of on your budgeting. So I think that the financial comparative between Australia, we could talk the entire Zoom on that. So
when Laura and I did a poll, we asked our audience, what questions should we add in? I reckon there was like 20 to 30 about, can you ask the brides about budget? Like 100%. Everyone is desperate to hear about financing. Especially because you used to be in finance.
Yeah,
so run us through.
So it's really interesting. So that is the sort of thing I suppose is next, is like, how with the vendors that you chose, how did you determine where you placed your investment? So what was the most important thing to you guys for your wedding, and what was the least? Was it venue and catering and flowers were not as important, or how did you go about distributing your budget?
So the finances were a mixture of our own and our parents, which was amazing to start off with. Any advice that I give to brides out there, some say, you know, get engaged and then get married. Us, we found it really, we were so grateful that we prolonged our engagement so that we had time to save up money. And then we had time to, you know, maybe this month we did a deposit for this and the following month we did a deposit for that. So it was all about spreading it out as much as possible, because I feel like if you did in such a short amount of time, that's when it gets really, really stressful. So we spread it out. We did do a whole spreadsheet. And then I think our most important thing to put the deposit down was definitely the venue. And when I looked at venues, I looked at a venue where I knew I didn't have to spend too much on styling or on flowers. And I knew that it was going to just be just as beautiful if it was on its own. So I would highly recommend to any brides out there, when you're looking for your venue, I feel like you save a lot of money if you find a venue that already has your style and you don't have to do too much work to it, and you can save funds that way. When it came to flowers, I didn't really care too much. I was just like, as long as they're white, they're good. Even the tables, even the stationery, it was more about that venue.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's I suppose it's the same sentiment when you're looking here, isn't it? If you book a venue wherever you go in the world and it's aesthetically beautiful, that does allow you to not have to recreate a space or hide or cover things. And you have the flexibility to, you know, go big on your florals if you want to, if that's what it is, or you don't have to at all.
Exactly.
Now, Iz, you are a sentimental girl. You have got, you know, you mentioned earlier like how important it was to be able to spend your proposal with your family and how conscious you were of your guests by calling them for an overseas booking. So, you know, you always think of those around you. Talk us through what of you and Josh, what did you inject into your wedding day that was, you know, that was personal and that was meaningful and, you know, that came from you?
So we did a lot of sentimental things throughout the whole wedding process. So starting from even our engagement party that was at Icebergs, where we first met, then we did the civil wedding at Bambini Trust restaurant, where we had our anniversary the year before that. And also in that building is where we found my engagement diamond. So did the civil wedding there. And also, by the way, any brides out there that are thinking of eloping and just doing a wedding with their, you know, close ones, perhaps maybe only four of you, like it was one of the best things apart from also the wedding. It was incredible. It only cost like $900. I wore my mother-in-law's wedding suit that she wore to her wedding day. So I didn't spend any money on that. And it was so special to me, as well as I replicated one of Josh's grandparents' necklaces. And because Josh's grandparents couldn't make it to the wedding overseas, they were our witness. So we did it there. And it was we had a private room. It was candlelit, beautiful music, jazz music. And then we had a private dinner after that. Then when we did the whole wedding, so for the hens example, it was very sentimental to us because at the start of our relationship, Josh, he loves to write love letters. So I wanted to make sure that the hens incorporated like romance and poems. So I went and bought some like Italian poem books to put across the table. And that's where the whole floral and enchantment like theme came. Then on the wedding day, we had a few different things that we did that just meant a lot to us. First of all, the bridesmaids, my sister, who's very, very shy, she was my maid of honor. Her favorite color is pink and her favorite flower is a sunflower. So I kind of based all of my bridesmaids around her, just so that she could be a little bit more confident on the day. Then instead of doing a father and daughter dance, because my dad was walking me down the aisle, I decided to do a mother-daughter dance, especially because my mom's from Colombia and I had a lot of Colombian people come. So a Spanish dance meant a lot to not only me, but also to them and to incorporate them in our culture. Then when it came to our celebrant, I had my best friend who introduced Josh and I in Sydney. So she was our celebrant, which was great because we also saved money there because we had our civil wedding back in Australia, which again was pretty cheap. So because we didn't have to pay for another like a celebrant and it was her, it was great. Our bridal table, we didn't have a bridal table. Instead, we sat around our family because we were with our bridal party for a whole week at Villa Camilla. And so we wanted to be around our family because they had traveled so much. We really didn't see them too much. To sit around them was incredible. Oh my gosh, I could just keep going on. I don't know if I should. We're probably going to waste.
I think that's really important. There are so many people out there that will see your wedding and come to a planner or come to a florist and just say, I want what she had. You know, we get it every day. And I think it's really important to make sure that, you know, you do all these little things, and these little things take time and they take effort, but they come from you and they come from your heart. And I think this is where it differentiates the weddings between I want what she had, you being that person, to being the person that everybody says, I want what she had. It's so important. Everybody can get lost in the hype of Instagram and the beauty of it, which, you know, each to their own. Some people it's really important to, but these personalized elements that just screams you and Josh, and, you know, your family and your friends are going to look back and be like, that's exactly what I would have expected their day to be, because that is so them.
Oh, bless. It was, and they were all my highlights. Doing all those things, all those little things really make it. So yeah, it was just, and then we did things that weren't really us. Like we weren't going to do the whole, you know, clap whilst you walk in and they announce you and then have the bridal party come in. And then there was a few other things that we opt out of only because it just wasn't us.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's important because that tell us what your soon to be married couple's piece of advice it is. What do you tell them?
To do what you want to do, for sure. Always do what you want to do. I look back on it and I could do it over and over again only because we did exactly what we wanted to do. And although it was a bit hard, a bit hard to not get, listen to other, I don't know, it's a bit hard to put into words, but
trust yourself and your thoughts and your feelings.
Exactly, for sure.
Well, Izzy, thank you for joining us, and congratulations, doll. We love you very much.